to Ares Letho versus Coburn and Clay Building. It's an appeal from a decision of the Workers' Compensation Commission. Those on the line are Chief Judge Felton, Judge Frank, and Judge Huff, for the benefit of the attorneys immediately following the telephone conference call the argument. A recording will go up online on our site if you want to avail yourself of that. So let's begin, Mr. Nye.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mike Nye. I represent the appellant, Mr. Gutierrez-Lazo. We would like the court to reverse the finding of the Workers' Compensation Commission concluding that Mr. Lazo was barred from receiving workers' compensation benefits because of the willful violation of a safety rule of his employer under Code Section 65.2306, subsection A5. There were many different safety rules that were discussed when this case was before the commission. And out of an abundance of caution and in the alternative, we have assigned error to each of them. Both the three allegations that were in the employer's Rule 110 notice and a fourth rule that was mentioned for the first time at the hearing. I will do my best to answer any questions that the panel has, but I think our time is most productively spent on two specific rules. The allegation that Mr. Lazo violated a safety rule by using a piece of wood that was too short for the to use with the table saw, the allegation that he was using the wrong tool, and the separate allegation that he violated an employer safety rule by moving his hand too close to the moving saw blade.
Counsel, this is Judge Frank. Is there such a thing as a hazard that is so obvious that you don't need a safety rule to cover it? Let's say that we have a company that does steel construction in skyscrapers. Do they need a safety rule that tells the employees not to jump off the building?
No, I don't think so, but I think jumping off the building is different from this case. I think that would be an intentional injury, and as even my colleague Mr. Duncan concedes in his brief, on page 22, certainly the claimant did not intend to cut himself, unquote.
But
I don't think that
intentional. The commission found factually that he intended to put his hand over the saw. Is that correct?
I think the commission found the commission's findings are vague, and that's one of the problems in the with this opinion. The commission's the commission mentioned that his use of a piece of wood that was too short was, quote, part of the mechanism of the injury sustained by the claimant, unquote. And of course, as we've argued in our brief, it was error to consider the argument that he was using a piece of wood that was too small, because that allegation was not in the in the employer's Rule 110 notice. Also, I don't think that the commission found as a fact that the commission also made an erroneous finding of fact that he was reprimanded twice for previously moving his hand over the saw blade. Is that determinative of the issue?
Mm-hmm.
I think it is enough to mandate a reversal of the commission's opinion, yes. Because I think in the absence of that finding, the commission might have been much more willing to find several facts in Mr. Lazo's favor. I think that the commission would have been much more willing to find that the nature of the safety instructions that Mr. Lazo remembered by the time of his injury was a general admonition just to be careful. Much of the testimony of all the employer's witnesses was that his their instructions were very general. Greg Lowe said that he would just ask an employee whether he had experience working with a particular tool, and if the person said yes, he would take him at his word, and if the he noticed the person doing a dangerous thing, he would correct them. Clay Cormichael said it was important for all the employees to be careful while using power tools, because they are all dangerous. Matthew Cormichael was the only
Judge
person.
Frank again, his testimony was that he specifically told the claimant not to put his hand over or near the saw.
I believe Matthew Cormichael was the only witness who testified that he told the claimant not to put his hand over the saw. It was unclear when he said that. I think it's interesting that the funds brief attempts to distinguish the case of Salmon versus Tarmac America based on the fact that that employee was last told about the rule during orientation. But there was no testimony about when Matt Cormichael told Mr. Lazo not to remove the saw. The employer had the burden in this case, according to our Supreme Court's opinion in King versus Empire Collieries, of proving that the employee, quote, did an improper act with the full awareness that the act was forbidden, unquote. The commission rejected this argument under the erroneous belief that he was twice reprimanded.
Chief Judge Felton, there are several judges who've tried to ask you questions. If you would please respond as they ask them.
I'm sorry. Perhaps I didn't hear them. What question?
Let me try one. This is Judge Huff. This admonition to the way it was expressed in the Rule 110 notice was for the workman to keep his hands away from the saw blade while cutting a board. That was not a written admonition, was it?
I don't think there was an admonition to keep his hands away. You're right, it was not a written admonition. It was undisputed there were no written materials.
And how does this unwritten admonition differ, if at all, from negligence standard? That is, act as a reasonably prudent person around this open and obvious hazard.
I don't think there is a difference. I think that the deputy commissioner essentially found that Mr. Lazo was negligent and said that because this was obviously dangerous, that he shouldn't be entitled to benefits. But part of the point of the workers' compensation system is to remove the fault determination that previously governed these cases. And in the Harbin versus Jamestown Village Joint Ventures, this court said, evidence of a hazardous act involving an obvious danger without more does not prove more than negligence.
Let me ask you this, so changing the subject, and I realize you wanted to focus on two of the points that had been made by the commission, but just so I can get this out of the way, the absence of the guard on the table saw, I understand there was a dispute of testimony about that, but at a minimum, the supervisor had admitted that he had removed the guard the day before. Is that correct?
That is the supervisor's testimony, yes.
And the supervisor, or no one for the employer, had seen fit to return the guard to the saw by the time of this accident?
Well, I think there was disputed testimony about whether the guard was ever used. Mr. Lazo said it was never on the saw.
Right.
I think that the deputy's determination suggests that the deputy agreed with Mr. Lazo that there was never a guard because they used the word excuse, that if the absence of a guard is not condoned, but it is no excuse. If the deputy had found that that there was a guard, but it was Mr. Lazo's fault that he wasn't using the guard at the time he was injured, then it would be more natural to say that the absence of a guard makes matters even worse, or that it aggravates Mr. Lazo's supposedly reckless method of operating the table saw. I also think it's important to note that the full commission's opinion, which is what we're appealing, says nothing at all about the guard.
Right.
So I think this court can only affirm the commission's ruling if it agrees with the commission's decision to ignore the omission of the small wood rule in the commission's 110 notice, and if it also finds that the commission's misreading of the record in finding that Mr. Lazo was twice reprimanded previously for moving his hand over and behind the moving saw blade when no witness testified that was the reason for any reprimand was harmless error. And I don't think the court can find that was harmless error because there are two errors. And maybe if one of them didn't exist, the harmless error would be more formidable. And the other reason is because the the commission's opinion never makes clear what role the rule violations played on their own. One can't decide without speculating that but for one of the errors, the commission's result would have been the same.
Mr. Nye, you've reached your 10-minute mark. You're welcome to continue to argue, but you're now in your rebuttal time.
Okay, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are any questions right now.
Okay, any questions?
I have none, thank you.
I have none. Thank you, Mr. Nye. We'll reserve your 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Now for the employer and the insured fund, who will argue first?
I will, Your Honor. Emily Kirkpatrick.
Okay, Ms. Kirkpatrick, you have 10 minutes of the 15.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Emily Kirkpatrick, and I'm here today representing the Uninsured Employers Fund, one of the appellees in this case. The fund respectfully asks this court to affirm the commission's decision. As a note at the outset, due to the limited time for oral argument and the volume of factual background, the fund relies on the written statements of both appellees submitted to this court as well as to the full commission in the record. In this case, the Workers' Compensation Commission properly found that Mr. Lazo's claim is barred on the grounds of his violation of a known safety rule amounting to willful misconduct. Had Lazo abided by the employer's safety rules, the injury would not have occurred. In its opinion, the commission incorporates Deputy Commissioner Tabb's findings regarding the cause of Mr. Lazo's injury, finding that the injury resulted from Lazo's performing an activity which they called obviously perilous, wherein he pushed the board he was cutting with his right hand without a push stick and moved his left hand over and down behind an obviously turning saw blade.
Ms. Kirkpatrick, this is Chief Judge Felton. Of what safety rule did he willfully disobey?
Well, as Mr. Nye touched, there were several safety rules. I think that the overall safety rule that he violated is the proper operating of the table saw. He violated that rule through several actions. One is failing to use a push stick. Another is failing to use the saw with a safety guard on. And the third, another would be introducing his hand over and behind a moving saw blade.
Do you distinguish between intentionally violating it or just acting negligently?
Yes. As the deputy commissioner found and the commission affirmed, introducing the left hand over the moving table saw blade rose above gross negligence. This is because Mr. Lazo knew that this was prohibited, and he was engaging in operating the table saw while violating several rules under which he knew he was supposed to follow when operating the table saw, one of which is introducing his hand over that blade. And with regard to the issue of the intentional act, it's not necessary that the employer prove that the employee having the rule in mind determined to breach it, but it's enough to show that knowing the rule, he intentionally performed the forbidden act, which is the case in this matter.
Well, in this case, this is Judge Huff. In this case, hasn't the employer conceded that the claimant did not intentionally or willfully place his hand on that spinning saw blade?
I think that the employer could agree that he did not intentionally place his hand on the saw blade, but he definitely intentionally placed his hand over and behind a moving saw blade, which was in direct violation of known safety rules about which he had been instructed multiple times
Why isn't that just a common sense thing? It's an open, obvious hazard, and so a workman needs to be careful not to put his hand on the blade. That's where the harm happens. Why isn't that just negligence?
Certainly, it could be categorized as common sense not to put one's hand near a saw blade in that manner, but it is not only common sense, it is also, in this case, a safety rule that was explicitly instructed. He was explicitly instructed on by several people multiple times.
This is Judge Frank. Didn't he testify that he knew he shouldn't have done it?
He did. He did testify that he knew he wasn't supposed to do it, and that he knew that doing it could be dangerous and could cause.
And that he was in a hurry.
He did testify that he was in a hurry. The testimony about whether or not he was told to be in a hurry from the supervisor conflicts with Mr. Lazo's testimony, but he did say he was in a hurry. And in the deputy commissioner's opinion, which was incorporated into the commission's opinion, they addressed that and said whether or not he was in a hurry, it doesn't excuse his violation of these known safety rules. And in addition, just a point of clarity that I believe Mr. Nye mentioned that only Matthew Cormichael testified to having instructed Mr. Lazo about keeping his hand away from the saw, but I believe the testimony actually reflects that Clay Cormichael and Matthew Cormichael testified that they had instructed him on that issue, as well as Mr. Lowe, his direct supervisor. Additionally, just addressing that fourth action that Mr. Nye mentioned as not being explicitly stated in the Rule 1.10 notice, that of using the wrong tool for the size of wood. I think that Mr. Nye is missing in the notice. Not only is the table saw mentioned, but the choice of the tool can't be separated. It's not a distinct and separate choice or rule violation in the context of the rule that was actually violated here, because putting his hand behind the saw blade and over the whirring saw blade in order to steady the piece of wood, not using a push stick, these resulted from the choice to use the table saw, which he shouldn't have done. So the testimony that came out during the hearing regarding that issue, can't be separated from the rules that were explicitly listed in that Rule 1.10 notice. And that notice was timely.
Judge Huff again. Why does the failure to use a push stick have anything to do with this case? That was something, he was using his right hand instead of a push stick, and the right hand was not the hand that was injured, and so I don't see how there's a causal connection there.
Correct. Well, the hand that would have pushed the push stick is the right hand, because the left hand was going behind to steady the board. The failure to use a push stick is not explicitly noted as the determinative cause of the injury. It is noted as one of several unsafe violations that he was engaged in. The testimony from the employer's principals was that the push stick is intended to prevent the hand from coming into contact with the blade, and it does that in a number of ways. One, from keeping your hand from getting too close. Two, from giving you a little more control over the board.
But that was not the hand, was it? It was
no.
His left hand.
Correct.
Right hand. Ms. Kirkpatrick, with that, you have reached, according to my watch, the 10-minute mark. You can continue to argue, or Mr. Duncan can use his 5 minutes.
If I have reached my time, I will hand it over to Mr. Duncan.
All right. Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Duncan?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, let me begin by also indicating, as Ms. Kirkpatrick did, that because of the time limitations, I would rely on our brief to submit it to you folks, as well as the written statement that we submitted detailing our position to the full commission. So I'm going to try and speed through this in light of the declining time. Number one, with regard to the last question that was asked about, well, the push stick was being used by the gentleman with his right hand, so how was the left hand implicated? I think the record will reflect that part of the reason that a push stick is required for safety reasons is as you push the stick near this running blade, it has a tendency, depending upon the size of it and the weight of it, for it to rise up. And so that's exactly what happened here, and so that's why the claimant reached his hand over, because it's possible, as the evidence in the record shows, that piece of wood could come back and injure the claimant, hit him in the face, or something else could happen on the other end. So even though the dominant reason for using the push stick is to take the right hand and keep it away from the blade, if in fact one of the concerns is that it may move up or it may get jammed in there, and the gentleman then reached over as he did here, then that is a natural consequence of why that push stick is so important.
But in this case, and this is Judge Huff again, in this case,
yes,
there was no evidence to suggest that the board did kick back while it was being cut, was there?
I think that there was, Your Honor. I think that Mr. Lowe, the next day when he went back, and I think there were also some discussions involving the claimant. I can't give you, the record reference, but I believe that Mr. Cormichael, Matt Cormichael, as well as Mr. Lowe, discussed what happened, and that's, one of the reasons that this whole case has evolved in this fashion. Because otherwise we would not have known enough information to even consider that defense. But I believe there is evidence in the record.
But you don't know where?
I can't give it to you off the top of my head, and I apologize for
all
that.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Now, let me mention something that hasn't come up yet, but I think it's also important. You know, we raised in front of Deputy Commissioner Tabb and in our brief to the full commission the doctrine of known and expected consequences. And that kind of moves into the question that was asked earlier about negligence. And the doctrine of known and expected consequences was never mentioned by Deputy Commissioner Tabb, and in our appeal, it didn't get addressed by the full commission either. But that basically says that if there is something that, to paraphrase what one of your judges asked earlier, something that's open and obvious, and this gentleman did mention that he knew it was dangerous. In fact, his coworker that he brought to testify also mentioned it was dangerous. It doesn't take, you know, a genius to figure out, well, the blade is spinning, that you should not do anything to get close to that, or you're going to, you know, potentially pay the price for it. And so there's a line of cases that are cited in our brief on page 20. They most frequently come up in a medical context where somebody has a bad back and the doctor says don't lift anything more than 25 pounds, but the worker goes ahead and lifts it anyway, and there's certainly a potential there for an injury to happen. And so that basically takes away the idea that this was an accident, because the very essence of an accident is something that is unexpected. And so I would respectfully submit that even if you were to conclude, which I would, you know, vigorously oppose, obviously, that the safety rule violation defense has not been sustained on the record, I would respectfully suggest in the alternative that the known and expected consequences, which is also found on page 2 of the hearing transcript in front of Judge Tabb. In other words, I didn't just say, you know, he didn't sustain an accident arising out of the course of the employment. I said specifically known and expected consequences, and that's something that I don't think has gotten much treatment from anybody, so I'm just raising it for the benefit of Your Honor.
That's on page 20 of your opening brief?
Yes. It's the second full paragraph, and I cite a case, Carpet Palace versus Salahi, and it continues on to the next page as well. So,
Mr. Duncan,
yes.
We have quickly reached that 5-minute mark, and we understand that for each of you that which you haven't gotten a chance to say in oral argument, you rely on your briefs, and we always take that in consideration. So we thank you for your argument, Mr. Duncan.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your courtesy.
It's certainly glad to have you with us. Mr. Nye, I believe you have your 5 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I'll begin where Mr. Duncan left off by addressing this argument that this was so obvious that it was clearly misconduct and that this was only an expected consequence. In the Carpet Palace case, the claimant had been injured previously by lifting a heavy object and had been told on 8 occasions by his doctor that he mustn't do this. Also, lifting objects was not part of his job, which was administrative in nature. It's very distinguishable from this case. Mr. Duncan's reliance on the Carpet Palace case would be much stronger if the commission were right that Mr. Lazo had previously been reprimanded for moving his hand over and behind the saw blade on 2 previous occasions. But everyone concedes that that finding was wrong, that those were not the reasons for his prior reprimand.
Counsel, this is Judge Frank. Does it make any difference whether he was reprimanded or whether he simply was told that he can't put his hand over or around the blade that was spinning 5,000 revolutions per minute or whatever?
I think it does matter, because the commission, the employer's burden isn't just to show that he did something he knew he was dangerous. It's to show that he did something he knew he was that was forbidden. And the idea, the definition to just keep away is too vague.
No, but you're selecting the facts you want. The testimony was that he was told not just to that the machine is dangerous. he was told specifically not to put his arm or hand near or around the blade.
But obviously his hand needs to be somewhat near the blade in order to operate the table saw. The deputy commissioner relied on Mills versus Vepco, but that case was very different because in that case the linemen were supposed to put on their gloves when they were less than 3 feet away from energized lines. I think Your Honor's point is well addressed by the commission's opinion in the case of Salmon versus Tarmac America, in which a person was injured by putting his hand in the path of blades of a splitter machine that would split pieces of concrete. The commission wrote, and I quote, that the claimant, quote, admitted that he knew that his hand was in the path of the blades and knew that the blades posed some danger. He admitted fault after the accident and admitted that he should not have performed the act, which resulted in injury. We find such admissions establish no more than negligence and confirm the obvious. Anyone, in hindsight, would have concluded that he should not have placed his hands in the machine when such act resulted in severe injuries. I think that they needed to show that moving his hand in this specific way was forbidden, and even if that is a rule violation, this court can't affirm the case because the commission also erred in finding that the size of the wood that he was using was, quote, part of the mechanism of the injury suffered by the claimant. I disagree with Ms. Kirkpatrick that the use of the correct saw and the keep hands away blade are inseparable. Obviously, one can put one's hands too close to the blade without even using the saw to cut a piece of wood. These are different things. And in Sosa versus R.R. Donnelly, the commission enforced the Rule 110 very strictly. The employer's notice said one shouldn't lift any object that was more than 50 pounds. And at the hearing, the employer tried to argue that employee was injured while failing to use a hoist to lift a heavy roll of paper. The commission held that the 110 notice didn't allow for that. That they strictly enforced it regardless of prejudice. And the appellant argued the same thing in Lowe's of Short Pump versus Virginia, and this court affirmed the commission's strict enforcement of Rule 110, finding that that's a reasonable way of interpreting the rule. Because if one doesn't enforce it strictly, then employers don't have an incentive to comply with the rule. And
I just was going to tell you, you're at the very end of your time, and as according to my chronographer here.
Very well, Your Honor. Thank you for listening.
Well, we want to thank all of you. We know it's difficult in the limited time period you have to argue these cases, and we also know that you rely on your briefs for that part of the argument that you did not get to, and certainly did not waive it. But Mr. Nye, on behalf of the claimant, and Mr. Duncan, on behalf of the employer, Ms. Kirkpatrick, on behalf of the fund, we very much appreciate your argument today. We will go at this point in time into our normal mode, judges, but before we do so, we hope that each of you has a wonderful day. The sun is shining down where I am in Williamsburg, and I hope that it's doing the same where you are.
It is.
Thank you very much, Connor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.